How has pollen traditionally been counted? What sort of technology has been used? And what are you deploying now to bring it into the modern world?
Pollen counting is a really interesting field. It still uses clockwork motors for many of the pieces of equipment that we use to collect pollen. So what happens and what has happened in the past is there's a small clockwork motor attached to essentially a vacuum, and that vacuum has a slit. As the air comes in through this slit, it gets impacted onto a slide with a sticky material on it. And the clockwork motor is responsible for moving that slide over the slit over a period. For us, that's 24 hours. And so what we're able to get is one slide at the end of the day that has 24 hours of air across it. What we then do is we have some special stains which color pollen and other biological particles on the slide. Now we stain it, we put a cover slip on top, which is just a piece of glass, and we take it to a microscope and we actually count what's on the slide. So for grass pollen, we will move left to right across the slide and just count the number of grass pollen grains.
So a human being is eyeballing it and physically counting the number of pollen grains.
Right. And that is a long and arduous process. It can take up to an hour just to do a count of a single day.
And are you seeing all sorts of pollen? You're not just capturing grass pollen, right? So you need to train someone to look, what is the difference between a grass pollen and birch pollen?
That's right. You need to recognize the type. So for grass, that's going to be a round pollen grain with a pore on it or a little spot on it. And other pollen types will have different sort of features. And so that's how we tell the difference between different pollen types. And so the person who needs to have a reasonable amount of training actually needs to identify the right type of pollen. And we go through and we count it all. And we identify those, count it, and we come up with a number. If we want to count a different type of pollen, then we've got to count the slide again, and we're looking for a different type of pollen. It takes about an hour to count every type of pollen that you want to count. So if you're counting one type, so for example, grass, it'll take a person about an hour. If you want to count grass and say cypress, for example, that's probably about 2 hours of work. So you can see that it's really unmanageable to be counting 20 or 30 different types of pollen using that method, because that's a lot of pollen counting. Around Victoria, we currently operate 8 traps and collect data from 8 sites. The problem with this really manual method is that in the past, we haven't been able to operate them year round. They only operate for a set period, and that's from October through to December. And that's because we struggle to get the funding to operate those services year round. And it's also difficult to have people go up to a roof every day of the year. That's a challenge. So we have to go up to that roof even on weekends and public holidays, and on Christmas, there's someone that goes up to that roof. And that can be really challenging to organize for the entire year and across such a vast country like Australia.
Historically, you're looking at what was in the air yesterday, not what's in the air right at this moment. Is that correct?
That's right. Because the slide's been sitting in the trap for 24 hours, and then we take it down and we do count it, but it's what was in the air yesterday. It's not what's going to be in the air today. And so there's a really big difference between pollen counts and pollen forecasts. Pollen counts are what happened yesterday. Pollen forecasts are around what's going to happen today, tomorrow, and the next day.
Melbourne Pollen is officially transitioning to air health. Tell us a little bit about some of the people in the team that are using machine learning and other techniques to take the pollen counts and turn those into accurate pollen forecasts.
I work closely with Usha Natala, who is a researcher at the University of Melbourne in the Melbourne Data Analytics Platform. And we have worked closely together for a number of years developing a machine learning algorithm to forecast pollen across Victoria. We take inputs from satellites, from weather stations, and of course, pollen counts, and we apply that to AI. And this produces a forecast. In the past, that forecast was always for specific locations. So for example, we could forecast Melbourne or we could forecast Dookie, but it was challenging for us to be able to forecast at every kilometre or every 2 kilometres. And that's because forecasting, especially on that sort of scale, is really computationally expensive and requires a lot of resources. So over the last few years, we've spent a lot of time improving the way that we do forecasts and improving our AI models. And now we're now moving towards a national forecasting system for our machine learning algorithms. So what it means is that we'll be able to do pollen forecasting everywhere in Australia moving forward.
If you play the tape forward in the future, that Ed and the fabulous team that you work with could potentially do pollen forecasting in other countries. Does the intellectual property that you've gathered and the machine learning algorithms that you've developed, do they have global applicability?
Absolutely. And we're very excited and we're looking for partners to work with to test if our AI models will work overseas. We're working with some people from the US and some from the UK in the early conversations, but we're reasonably confident that they worked. I'm very excited about that.
And tell us about the machines that you're now deploying in the field. I believe you've got one in Melbourne and one in Perth that are automated pollen counters that are providing you near real-time pollen data.
Yes, as I said, pollen counting is a really laborious process. Really do need to switch to automated systems, and the automated systems provide a lot of advantages. One of the big advantages is that we get real-time or near real-time information about what's in our air. So we actually can get information about what happened in the last 15 minutes or 1 hour. And that information can be used to produce better pollen forecasts. The way the automated machines work as opposed to the manual machines is that particles are emitted or moved through the air. Some lasers are shot at the device. These create an image that are captured with a camera, and we then use AI to determine the shape and size of the particles that's flying through the air. And in that way, we can actually detect and determine whether the particle is a dust particle or a pollen particle. And if it is a pollen particle, what type of pollen it is. So we're able to determine if it's grass or cypress, pine, et cetera, et cetera. And the really big advantage here is that not only are we getting data that is in the last 15 minutes or the last hour of data, we're able to identify lots of different types of pollen at the same time. So that's providing us with a lot more information than we could previously get. And the other big advantage around that is that these machines can operate the entire year. So that means that the device that we've been operating in Melbourne has essentially not been turned off now for over 2 years. We've been continuously monitoring the amount of pollen in Melbourne's air for that period of time since we got it, which is really exciting, and it's giving us a lot more information.
So no more sticky tape, no more slides.
That's right. No more sticky tape, no more slides. And more importantly, that information can go and help us understand how people are feeling throughout the year, so we can actually correlate that with symptoms. We're also able to use it for research. So for example, we can start identifying seeing spikes in asthma admissions to hospitals. We're able to identify if it's related with pollen, and if so, what type of pollen it might be related to.
So it really does extend the service that you're able to provide, both in terms of the period that you're counting pollen and reporting pollen, but also the types of things that you're seeing in the air.
That's right. Yes, absolutely. And that's why we're now able to offer forecasts for different pollen types as well, and not just limited to grass.
And what is the time delay between measuring it at the unit and then being able to report on it through the Melbourne Pollen Air Health platforms?
At the moment, we only forecast out in 24-hour blocks. And the reason for that is that we need a lot of historical data to create forecasts. We have more than 30 years of historical data for Melbourne, but they are 24-hour blocks. We've now got 1 year of automated pollen count data, but it's still not quite enough for us to be able to forecast in hourly blocks moving forward. Some of that work started, and we're making some progress towards creating forecasts that are in shorter blocks, so we can start forecasting what's happening in the next 3 hours or this afternoon, rather than a whole 24-hour block. But there's still a ways to go. And one of the more important things is that we need more data. And the easiest way to get that data is to have more of these devices out in the field. And so for us, what we're really interested in doing is being able to deploy more of these automated counters around Victoria and especially around Australia.
How much do these pollen counters cost and how much does it cost to service them every year?
The devices are expensive. They're probably close to $150,000 each device, and the servicing costs are also quite expensive. One of the main things that needs to happen to these devices is that they need to be disassembled, cleaned, and reassembled. What we're learning from our colleagues in Europe is that generally only happens once a year in Europe. One of the surprising things that we're finding in Australia is that the devices need cleaning more often in Australia. So we're looking at cleaning cycles that are approximately 2 to 3 times a year.
And why is that it? Why would it require more cleaning here than in Europe?
We don't know. It could be a number of things. It could just be the amount of particles or the types of particles in the air. It could be the amount of dust, the amount of sand that's in the air. We're still working through trying to identify why there's such a dramatic difference.
Does any other company or organization capture on the ground, because your pollen stations are on top of buildings, but is anyone else capturing real-time data here in Australia that may publish a pollen count or pollen forecast?
There are lots of entities out there that do pollen forecasting, but what really sets us apart is that we validate our forecasts. To my knowledge, the team, which includes researchers from Canberra, New South Wales, Tasmania, us, Curtin University in Western Australia, and ECU, we're the only people that are actually measuring pollen and then using that information to generate forecasts. There are some providers out there that do generate forecasts, but they're not using data that's been collected in Australia.
There are other companies that publish pollen counts and forecasts. How would they do that if they're not collecting real-time pollen samples or what is actually in the air?
A very good question. Perhaps they're using some satellite data, possibly meteorological data. But without pollen count data, and especially historical pollen count data of what's actually happening, I struggle to see how the quality of those forecasts would be accurate.
And most importantly, Melbourne Pollen and Air Health actually goes to the trouble of validating the data and the forecasts. Is that correct?
We do lots of work validating and checking that our forecasts are good. And that is not just as simple as how many times do we get it right. We do a lot of work. Our pollen forecasts are often in categories. So we forecast low, moderate, high, and extreme days. And the high and extreme days don't occur that often. And for us, what's really important is identifying those extreme events where pollen's going to be really high. For us, what's really important is that our forecasts are accurate at forecasting those rare events. And so we spend a lot of time validating our forecasts for that.
And in Victoria, the Bureau of Meteorology and the state health departments publish thunderstorm asthma forecasts and warnings. And Melbourne Pollen plays an important role in that. Tell us how you work with those organisations to help them come up with those forecasts and warnings.
We do. So we manage the monitoring network for Victoria. And we also use our machine learning algorithms for grass pollen forecasting, which goes into the forecast for thunderstorm asthma. So there's a big difference between a grass pollen forecast that's telling you how much pollen is in the air and a epidemic thunderstorm asthma forecast, which is telling you the risk likelihood that a epidemic thunderstorm asthma event would happen. So we feed in information about the grass pollen forecast. The Bureau of Meteorology feeds in information about the types of storms or if there are storms and the type of storm. And then together we use a operating procedure which determines the risk that there might be a thunderstorm asthma event. And this is work done very closely with the Bureau of Meteorology and Victorian Department of Health. We've been operating now for 6 or 7 years as a pilot service and confirming that we're able to predict thunderstorm asthma events and that we have all the systems in place to be able to do that. And part of that process is involves checking the quality of our grass pollen forecasts and making sure that we're able to capture and identify rare events, so those high, most extreme grass pollen days.
What do you think the future of pollen counting looks like in 5 or 10 years' time? And do you see that things will be fundamentally different?
There is a lot of technology on the market now that does some types of pollen counting, but a lot of it remains unvalidated and it's not operating at a level that is absolutely perfect. So I'm excited to see what happens in the next few years in terms of the types of devices that are out there and whether the cost of those devices comes down. I would really love to see the cost of automated pollen monitors come down so that we can have a dense network of these devices across Australia, which is really going to make a significant improvement in our forecasting models. I'd also like to see more data coming through those devices so that they're able to provide high levels of information. So that is data that's hourly or sub-hourly, and that will mean that we're able to produce forecasts in the next 3 hours, 6 hours, 9 hours, that sort of thing.
And do you think it's possible that there could be validated sensors one day that we could have in our homes that can be informing us about what's happening on the air in our homes and not just the air outside?
I'm really excited about that opportunity, and I'd really like to talk to anybody who's looking at developing those sorts of sensors. But we already have sensors for indoor air quality, and I think for us that will be an interesting next step, whether we're able to start incorporating some of these sensors into homes and incorporating that data into our app, so that you're able to start linking not just what's happening in the outdoor environment with your symptoms and how you're feeling, but also what's happening in your home. And we know that in Australia in particular, there's all sorts of issues with indoor air quality coming from everything from gas stove tops through to mold because of flooding and even our environment, which can affect the quality of the air in our homes.